You are listening to Purdue's number one sports talk radio show, Sports Night.
You ready? Let's go!
Gervish looks to throw. Pump fakes again. He throws. 1, 50, 10, 5. Touchdown, Purdue!
Moore has it. Head to Johnson. He'll dunk it!
Marv waiting for the snap. Marv takes the snap. He's in. Touchdown! 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 The Boilermakers win! The Boilermakers win in overtime! Robert Marv with the touchdown!
Lewis comes down right side. Drives to the corner. Anthony Johnson shoots a three. Bullseye at the horn. Hubble with a basket. Top of the circle. Shoots a three ball. Bullseye! Run, Hubble!
Robinson over the middle. It's intercepted. Ricardo Allen, they score. He's at the 30. He's at the 40. One man to beat. It's Robinson. Robinson can't get him. He's at the 30. The 20. 15. 10. 5. Touchdown, Ricardo Allen. A 92-yard interception.
We're going to be broadcasting from a hot tub full of scotch.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. All right, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to Sports Night. I'm Mike Tanner.
I'm Mike Becca.
And I'm Steve Pedraza. Hope you all are having a fantastic March 20th out there. We're only just a little, probably about 18 hours away from beginning of March Madness. Are you guys excited? How awesome is the month of March for you guys?
Well, March, especially, you know, with March Madness, it's fun because, you know, especially this first weekend, more than the next few weekends, whenever you have a free time, you get back to your apartment or whatever, you can just turn on the TV and there's a game going on. Like, there's something you can watch, and it's always good basketball. So, it's a very sporty month. You're getting ready for baseball. March Madness is going on. So, I mean, as a sports fan, I mean, March is such a good month.
It is. How about you, Becca?
I like watching all the games. It's a little bit different this year, you know, being the first year, at least for us, that Purdue's not in. But it'll still be fun to watch some of the games and not have as much emotionally invested.
Right. You know, with technology these days, you can watch a game pretty much from any electronic device.
I gotta say something. I'm watching TV. The Heat, the Cavaliers are up 55-34 at half.
You had to bring that in. That was just on top of your mind.
I had it. Yeah, I looked up and I saw that, and I figured that's something you gotta say, because you know everybody in the media always talks about the Heat. So,
which we're gonna be talking about a little later on in the show. But, you know, with technology these days, you can watch it on any device.
Oh, yeah.
Most students bring laptops to class. You can pull up CBSSports.com, watch any game for free.
Yeah.
If you have a smartphone, you can pull it up with any CBS app, watch a game from there. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous how... I mean, it's a fun ridiculous. I don't know if that's a good way
right
to put it.
Fun
but,
ridiculous.
You know, you could watch any game at any time if you really, really wanted to. Even during work, and you know, instead of working, you know, earning your paycheck, you're going to be, you know, watching March Madness out there. And before we start everything going, I just want to remind everyone that tomorrow's deadline for submitting your bracket to the Sports Night Bracket Challenge is 12:15 Eastern. You can get all the information at our Twitter account and Facebook account. Twitter at Purdue Sports Tweets, and on Facebook at Purdue Sports Tweets. That's two words, Purdue Sports Tweets. We got 40 people already. It's kind of doubled from what we had about last year. I think we had like 16 or 17 minus me, Mike, and Tanner. Tanner, I don't know if you're... have you signed up yet?
No, I still have to. I was going to do it right after the show.
Slacker!
I'm a slacker, man. I got home and I decided to start watching some movies, and all of a sudden, dinner time, and then time for the show. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, so I'm going to be pushing hard to get maybe... I'm shooting for 50 people. We'll see if we could get 50 people by tomorrow, 12:15, the bracket deadline. And I believe the first game starts at 12:30, if I'm wrong, or 12:15. I don't know. They start sometime tomorrow afternoon. So it's going to be a great, great weekend for the first and second round. Well, second and third round of the March Madness tournament, as the play-in, quote-unquote, first-round games were played today, yesterday and today. So anyways, we got a fantastic show for you guys this evening. We're going to let you know what's happening in Purdue athletics. Mike and I will break down the Purdue men's basketball team season and preview March Madness tournament, which is scheduled to start, as I said, tomorrow. We'll dive into some Purdue baseball talk as the boys continue to play in warmer climate and have their inaugural game at Alexander Field this Friday versus Ohio State. We will talk some NFL as free agency started last week, and we'll look at what moves teams have made. Finally, we'll talk about some news in the world of sports in our segment, Headline Crossout. Mike and Mike, you guys ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Let's do it.
All right, Mike, start off.
All right, let's start off with Back in Black this past week in Boilermaker Athletics.
Reigning champions, the number 25 Purdue women's basketball team won its conference best ninth Big Ten women's basketball tournament title with a 62-47 victory over fourth seeded Michigan State two Sundays ago. The second seeded Boilermakers improved to a 37-10 all-time record in the conference's championship tournament and to 9-4 record in the championship game. Congrats to the Purdue women's basketball team. Next up for the ladies will be March Madness as a fourth seed, and will face 13-seeded Liberty in the first round.
The number 69 Purdue men's tennis team this past weekend took on Fresno State and Santa Clara. The Boilers defeated both teams 4-3. The Purdue men's tennis team will take the court again this Friday at Ohio State.
The number 20 ranked Purdue women's tennis team won their two matches over the past weekend, defeating both Winthrop and Florida International. The Purdue women's tennis team now has a record of 9-1 and will take to the court again this Friday at home versus Ohio State.
The Purdue men's golf team took part in the Mission Inn Spring Spectacular and finished tied for second with a team score of 871. The Purdue men's golf team will take the lead again this weekend in the Furman Intercollegiate in Greenville, South Carolina.
The Purdue women's golf team took part in the Lady Jaguar Intercollegiate and finished the tournament in first place with a team score of 876. The Purdue women's golf team will take to the links again in March Landing Invitational starting April 4th.
The Purdue wrestling team finished ninth at the 2013 Big Ten Championships hosted by the University of Illinois on Saturday and Sunday at Assembly Hall. Scoring 38 team points, the Boilermakers have four individuals automatically qualified for the NCAA championship and three more eligible for at-large bids.
The Purdue softball team went 500 over the past 2 weeks, going 5-5. The Purdue softball team will take the field again this weekend in a three-game series at Michigan.
Sports Night would like to congratulate four Purdue men's basketball players on receiving conference honors last Monday. A.J. Hammonds was named to the Big Ten All-Freshman team. Tyrone Johnson was named to third All-Big Ten team. D.J. Bird was named Honorable Mention All-Big Ten by the league's media. Finally, Drew Ranthip was recognized as Purdue's honoree for the Big Ten Sportsmanship Award. Congrats to these Boilermakers.
The Purdue men's basketball team finished the regular season 15-16. The Boilers ended up with the 7th seed and took on the 11th seed Nebraska in the first round of the Big Ten tournament in Chicago. The Boilers fell to the Cornhuskers 57-55. The Boiler season isn't finished as the team accepted an invite to the CBI and are currently taking on Western Illinois, and Steve will give you the stats on that.
With 31 seconds left in the game, Purdue is up 81-67 over the Western Illinois Leathernecks.
That's an awesome
Isn't it a bulldog there, or something? Like their logo is like a bulldog? Something of that sort. It is a bulldog. I'm looking at it right now. The Leathernecks. Leading scoring for Purdue is A.J. Hammonds with 15 points. Right behind him is Ronnie Johnson. D.J. Bird quiet in the first half, but in the second half caught on fire a little bit, draining three three-pointers. Then you got Tyrone Johnson with 10 points and Raphael Davis with the big contribution, 12 points. Coming off the bench, Sandy Machuch had 8 points. So caught a little bit of the game earlier at the start of the game on AXS.TV, which I didn't know was part of my cable package. But found the game a little rough start for the Boilers, but now they've kind of flexed their muscles a little bit, being, you know, a Big Ten team and kind of showing that, you know, although it is a CBI, that they're going to, you know, play their heart out regardless of what tournament they're in. So right now it's 81-67. I'm trying to refresh it. I'm pretty sure the game's final by now, unless Western Illinois is trying to freeze Purdue. But looks like Purdue's going to get to the Elite Eight in the CBI. So that's a...
Yippee.
Yeah, that's a little exciting.
I like that. Elite Eight's always good.
Hey, Elite Eight in any tournament, I guess, is, as in Danny Hope would say, is pretty good. Anyways, let's talk about the Big Ten tournament. I know it was a very disappointing game for the Boilers, losing to the 11-seeded Cornhuskers 57-55. Matt Painter said it best. He was just shocked by the way his team performed in this game. Kind of, it's a new season, as everyone likes to call it. It's playoff kind of atmosphere for teams, especially like Purdue, who knew going in there was no March Madness, there was no Big Dance, but there could have been an opportunity to get invited to the NIT, which obviously didn't happen for them getting invited to the CBI. But I thought it was very disappointing, especially to lose to the Cornhuskers, which had been sharing the last place spot with Northwestern this season. Very disappointing. What do you guys think?
I think the game was kind of a microcosm of the whole season. In the game, three-pointers were an absolute joke. Free throws were an absolute joke. Tyrone Johnson looked like he had no clue what the heck he was doing. I think in general, just it showed that Purdue just wasn't, you could tell this year they didn't have a complete team, and they didn't really have a team that you would think could show any kind of ability to go out there and beat respectable teams. Of course, we're talking about the Cornhuskers, which are one of the laughing stock basketball wise of the the Big Ten, and of course Purdue can't even go out and beat them in the Big Ten tournament. So, like Matt Painter said, it was shocking, but at the same time, how shocking really was it? You know what I mean?
Back up.
I don't know.
It looked like they were about to pull it back in the second half. They started showing up, and just down the stretch, what's killed us all years was free throws. The free throws at the very end of the game were definitely big ones that we were missing front ends on.
Yeah, Purdue in the game went 7-14 from the free throw line, shooting 50%. That's just not going to cut it. And then,
no,
regardless of who you're playing, if it's Nebraska or if it's IU, that's just not going to cut it. If you make three more, if you make three more of your free throws, we win this game by one, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
Those are it's in the work. Free points right there, and Purdue's been awful.
The whole season.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if Matt Painter's ever really addressed that with the players. They've obviously never gotten better. I would hope that, in the off season, that's something he really challenges all these returning players to do, is to get better at shooting free throws.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, if you can't shoot free throws, you're not going to win any games. All the close games, you're going to have problems, and that showed this year with Purdue. So, hopefully Matt Painter can go out there and challenge, like I said, all of his returning players to really work on that, because, yeah, like I said, if you can't shoot free throws, you're not winning basketball games.
Right. And Purdue is losing their top free throw shooter in DJ Bird. He shot about 80% from the free throw line. Next is Jacob Lawson. He barely comes off the bench nowadays. You rarely see him, which is kind of surprising me, because he always brings the energy, the same kind of energy Sandy has brought in these last four games of the season, and even in the Big Ten tournament when he was brought in over Hammonds, even with a bad ankle that Sandy's been playing with. It's been showing to spark this team somehow, some way. It's not him just putting up points. It's him just grabbing rebounds, grabbing boards physically, just being physical and bringing the energy that the team really needs.
Right.
So, a lot of growing pains this season. I know the season's not over yet. I'm going to look up the tournament bracket in a second just to see who Purdue might play next. But, I was for Purdue playing in the CBI just because this team is so young, and one more game, two more games, in the end, it will help this team. Plus, it is a tournament setting, tournament environment. So to get experience, whichever way you want to call it, CBI, NIT, it doesn't really matter. It's tournament experience. And I think this, in the end, is going to help Purdue in the long run. And Coach Matt Painter said it best. You look at teams like VCU, Pittsburgh, Oregon. They all went through the CBI in the last couple of years. And look, they're all in the NCAA tournament now. And then, we're going to find out this weekend, see if any of the experience in the CBI help them in the long run here for the March Madness tournament.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, playing basketball is always good. I mean, even, you know, regardless of whatever tournament it is, it's always good, I guess, like you said, you know, get that in-game experience, you know, playing multiple games within a, you know, a short span of time.
Right, right. Thoughts on the Big Ten tournament as a whole? Thoughts about the tournament in Chicago? It hasn't been in Chicago for, I believe, 4 years now, ever since we were freshmen in the freshmen at Purdue. And just thoughts on Ohio State winning the championship.
You know, it wasn't extremely shocking. I mean, Ohio State, I mean, it's right up there always, with Indiana. Mm-hmm.
And they've Ohio State's always done well in the Big Ten tournament.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, finishing the conference, you know, they finished one behind Indiana, so I mean, they were right up there. I mean, there wasn't really any surprise team that kind of, like, you know, how the year that Minnesota won it, it's kind of like, you know, so every now and then you get that team that, you know, isn't you know, top three in the conference that wins it. But I mean, this year I wasn't too shocked with Ohio State winning it. I mean, I thought for the most part it was a good tournament, and you know, being back in Chicago, it was nice. So I mean, for the most part, I enjoyed it. What do you guys think,
Becca?
I enjoyed it. I thought the Wisconsin IU game, you know, that was close. That was a good game, you know, down to the wire.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't really no shockers. I guess you could call Wisconsin, you know, I thought Wisconsin just ran out of gas. You know, they played
IU and then had to play.
Right, I mean, they had to play teams that, you know, going through the March Madness bracket, who I'm deciding, should they go to the Elite Eight? Can they go to the Final Four? You know, they played those kind of teams in Michigan, in Indiana. And, you know, for Wisconsin to make it to the final, I thought was a big achievement there for Paul Ryan. You know, named Big Ten Coach of the Year. I thought he's done a tremendous job with the talent he has. You know, it's not the talent he's had in the past, but it's still a great team. And, you know, I'm looking at my bracket now. I have them going to the Elite Eight. I know we're going to talk about March Madness later on, but I think they could take down Gonzaga. Because one of Gonzaga's losses, it was to Illinois, a Big Ten team. Physical team, you know, start of the season, Illinois was, you know, playing one of the, you know, best basketball in all the country at the beginning of the season. And absolutely, I think Wisconsin's playing one of the best, you know, one of their best, you know, stretches throughout the season. You know, granted, they lost to Ohio State, but I think they've been playing great basketball, and I think they could be a force to reckon with in the March Madness tournament.
I agree.
Thoughts of Chicago. I don't know if you guys watched a lot. I don't know how much you guys watched of the game. Full house? I mean, I was kind of trying to notice, you know, just to see the crowd, you know, before the UC. Looked pretty crowded for, you know, rounds 1, 2, and even for the final. You know, it kind of had that tournament kind of atmosphere, like a Sweet 16 or a Elite 8 game. Guys, mm-hmm. thought on just Chicago being as a, you know, maybe continue. I know they're switching up between Chicago and Indy back and forth now for the next 4 years. Thoughts on Chicago maybe keeping the Big Ten tournament?
Well, I think it's a good central part of the Midwest, and that's, for the most part, that's where, you know, Big Ten teams come from, aside from, you know, Penn State out in Pennsylvania, and Nebraska's a little bit west. But I think, you know, Chicago and Indy being really the centers of the Midwest for the most part, you know, geographically, I mean, and just, you know, city-wise, they're both, you know, two of the biggest cities in the Midwest. I think it's good. I mean, I think Chicago also is a big attraction city. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people would travel maybe for the games, and then, you know, if their team happens to lose and they're staying for another day, they can go and tour the city. It's kind of like, it makes it more of a vacation site, you know, than any other place where it's a little bit smaller of a city, less to do. You know what I mean?
Especially
it's kind of like a tourist city.
Especially when most schools are on spring break.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not quite sure on the history of Indianapolis. I know there's some great landmarks down there, and I know Chicago has its own Millennium Park, and, you know, I could go down a whole list of them. I think both places are tremendous sites to host a Big Ten tournament. Like you said, Mike, they're in the middle of everything.
Right.
I mean, yeah, in Chicago you might get more Iowa fans, you might get more Wisconsin, you might get more Minnesota fans, and you're obviously going to get more Illinois fans and Northwestern fans. But when you move it to Indianapolis, you get the more Michigan State fans, you get the more Penn State and Ohio State fans. I mean,
right.
Regardless, you're going to get fans from everywhere, because everyone knows Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, any of the top teams in the Big Ten, they all have a great fan base and that loves to travel. So you know you're going to get those fans regardless of whether it's in Chicago or Indianapolis. I think both spots are tremendous, tremendous sites for the Big Ten tournament.
Right. Yeah, I think it works well just for the Big Ten. I mean, they're both central locations. You know, I really don't see a problem with them moving it back and forth between the two sites.
Right, and I just looked on the CBI tournament bracket. Like we said, it was a final now. Purdue won 81-67 to move on to the Elite Eight in the CBI tournament. They will face Santa Clara. Very interesting team. Date has not been announced yet, but I'm assuming 2 days off, 3 days off, probably sometime this weekend. I'll be checking Twitter to over the hour just to see if any date has been set for that matchup. I know in the Back in Black segment we mentioned all the honors that Purdue men's basketball team's players got. A.J. Hammonds, Tyrone Johnson, D.J. Bird, and Drew Anthop. The Big Ten also came out with their Big Ten, all Big Ten teams. Selected by the coaches and by the media. First team, we're just going to do first team. Selected by the coaches was Victor Oladipo from Indiana, Cody Zeller from Indiana, Trey Burke, who was named Player of the Year from Michigan, Tim Hardaway Jr. also made it, and Deshaun Thomas from Ohio State made it. So Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio State, three teams represented in the first team selected by the coaches. And then for the Big Ten, all Big Ten first team selected by the media, pretty much the same. Except for Tim Hardaway Jr. getting the dropped off. Victor Oladipo, Cody Zeller, Trey Burke, Aaron Kraft made it from the media, and Deshaun Thomas from Ohio State. So you got Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio State. Thoughts on the first team selections?
I mean, I think they're fantastic. I mean, obviously you have to put veterans like Oladipo on. Deshaun Thomas making it on both, obviously that was a given. You know, Aaron Kraft, I mean, granted his offense isn't known for that, but I mean he's one of the better defenders in the Big Ten.
Named Defensive Player of the Year for the Big Ten.
Yeah. So him being in it for by the media doesn't surprise me. I think these are all good picks, and you know, on teams that were dominant this year, so I think rightfully so. I can't argue with any of them.
Becca?
Yeah, I'm going to say, well, I mean, you can't argue with any of those. And I do like seeing Aaron Kraft in there because, I mean, you can win games with scoring, but you got to have a player on there who's, you know, a defensive specialist, and that's definitely what he is.
Just ask Chris Kramer, right?
Exactly.
Real quick thoughts. A lot of people, you know, talking about the Player of the Year award, you know, goes out to the best college player in the nation. A lot of people are saying Victor Oladipo, but yet Trey Burke wins Big Ten Player of the Year. Do you think Oladipo deserves Player of the Year?
I would say it was rightful to go to Trey Burke because Trey Burke won a lot of games down the wire for Michigan.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I would give an argument for Oladipo is that he's been there. You know, he was on the teams that were terrible with Indiana, and he stuck with them, and, you know, look what he turned this team into the best team in the Big Ten. So, I mean, that could be as a sinning out kind of thing, you know, him finalizing his career, his last year at Indiana, and of course they're 27-6 and have a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. I mean, I guess you could argue that they were the best team the entire season, and, you know, that would be my argument, but I also don't have a problem with the pick that they had. So
currently, Victor Oladipo averages 13.6 points per game, and Trey Burke averages 19.2 points per game. Just to get a little perspective of their offensive capability for the team. Well, Trey Burke, yeah, a lot of the offense is geared towards him and Tim Hardaway Jr. Whereas, you know, with Oladipo, you know, you got Cody Zeller, Jordan Halls, Watford, and, you know, the list just goes on and on for that Indiana team.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Oladipo has been contributing a lot. It just might not show on the score sheet.
Exactly. I think he's a way better defender than Trey Burke.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt, he is. I mean, I think he's more of the complete package. Trey Burke is an offensive beast. So, you know, like we said, you can't go wrong either way, right? And, you know,
both are winners in my book, and unfortunately, one of them is an IU player.
Right. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to some Purdue baseball talk. Becca, let's start it off.
The Purdue baseball team currently has a record of 7-11 on the 2013 campaign. Purdue last played a three-game series versus Evansville and took two out of the three.
You were at one of those games, weren't you?
I did go down there. I was at the first game of the doubleheader. where they looked pretty solid. They had a couple home runs and took control. And then the second game, I stayed for a little bit of that, and it just got ugly and out of hand fast.
And then you just left, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, with the record of 7-11, we might have to get some Slurpees, you know.
It was also pretty cold and windy that day.
You caught that, didn't you, Steve?
I did.
Okay.
Anyways, currently, just looking at some stats for hitting and fielding. Currently, the team batting average is .246. That's down from .253 a week ago. Slugging percentage is .319, up from .314 a week ago. On base percentage is .313, down from .318 last week. Team has 151 hits, and fielding percentage is right around 97%. So defense has been kind of steady. I know they were off to a shaky start, but they've been holding at that 97% fielding percentage pretty much the whole season, except for that first week or two. And then in pitching, the team ERA is 6.49 ERA. That's up from 6.17 a week ago. They've allowed 81 walks and have 97 strikeouts from the pitching staff. Actually, things are looking a little bright for the Purdue baseball team. You know, I'm looking at the last six games, and they've gone .500 baseball. When you say, hey, I mean, .500, yeah. But if you look at the beginning of their season, yeah, it's kind of been hard to watch, a lot of growing pains. But hey, to gather things, get some young players some game experience, and, in the last six games, go 3-3 against a tough UIC Illinois Chicago team. Losing a very close game to Louisville at Louisville 3-1, and then taking 2 out of 3 at Evansville, I think is a big up for the Purdue baseball team, especially heading into Big Ten play this weekend at home, the inaugural game, which was supposed to happen Tuesday, but it was too cold.
And, we were talking about that earlier.
So the inaugural game at Alexander Field over there on the McCormick complex over there on McCormick Street will be this Friday versus Ohio State. Thoughts, guys, on just the season so far and the last six games being .500?
The first game, like I said, looked really well in the first game when they won 4-1. Mm-hmm. And then in that second game versus Evansville, they had a couple errors, and two outs in the inning, you can't be making errors. They had one where a fly ball hit about mid-length into center field. The three outfielders converged and all kind of stood there, and it just dropped right between the three of them. You got to talk, and outs like that you need to get. And then another time, somebody laid a perfect bunt down the line. The catcher, Sean McHugh was the catcher, grabs it, can't get him at first, and he looks and he goes to throw it to third, and he sails the pass, and they scored a couple more runs after that. But with two outs in the innings, you gotta play smart baseball, and you can't afford costly errors like that.
So a lot of growing pains, it sounds like.
Yeah.
I've been looking at the schedule here from Purdue this season. They were on a 7-game losing streak heading into the UIC 3-game series. It was actually a 2-game series because the Sunday game got rained out, so they went 1-1 versus UIC. But they had a 7-game losing streak heading into the game versus Cincinnati last Tuesday, where they defeated the Bearcats 7-4. So baseball, it's. I see the light at the tunnel.
It's better than what it was.
It was better than what it was.
And it is.
With a lot of young talent on this team, you don't have the Kevin Pelwicky. It's just like.
Isn't he on the Phillies? Not on the Phillies, but I think he's in their organization.
He's in their organization, right?
And we lost a considerate amount of our pitching, if I recall.
That too, Eric Charles. Lance Breedlove.
Yep.
Right.
I'm trying to, get...
Who's our closer that was awesome?
I know,
awesome.
I can't think of him right now.
Nick something.
Oh, my God, this is going to bother me now.
I remember we were at the game and they had the scouts all out there. Remember that? What's his name?
I know, I can't...
It was an Illinois game. Because all the scouts kept popping up.
Yeah, Whitgren. Does that sound right?
Yeah. That's it. It's Nick. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because all the scouts were on him.
Him and that Illinois closer.
Yeah. I'm looking at the stats. Yeah, a couple of things are up and down. The team's kind of leveled out. I think this is where you're going to kind of expect them.
you know, right around 250 batting average, 320 slugging, 320 on base percentage. I would really like to see the pitching staff get that that team ERA down.
Yeah, get that ERA down, man. It's to have an ERA in the six.
You know,
it's
looking
not good.
Back at last year, we had Blake Mascarello, Joey Haas,
yes,
Lowe,
Joey Haas, yeah.
You know, those three combined had 27 victories.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we did lose a considerable
amount. Then you had Nit Wittgren with a 1.76 ERA. You know, the team average last year, just to give you guys a comparison between teams, last year was 3.16 at the end of the year. We're at 6.49 right now.
Yeah, that's more than twice the earned run average.
But, you know, this team has leaders. You have Sean McHugh, who was on the team last year, Stephen Talbot, Angelo Sanfranco, who's really struggling. He has a 182 batting average right now. He's really struggling at the plate.
Sanfranco?
Yeah, Angelo Sanfranco. Oh. So, yeah, he's really struggling from the plate. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Schreiber maybe put him down, you know, send him, you know, rest him for a couple games and maybe get his head back into the game. This team is young, so you got to rely on, you know, leadership, veteran leadership, especially from, like, the guys I said, Sanfranco, Talbot, and Sean McHugh. Who knows what it takes to win, and knows how to win. Knows what it takes to win a Big Ten championship, and that's
right.
You know, defending the crown starts this weekend versus Ohio State at home at Alexander Field. I think it's going to be, they're calling it Alexander Premier Week, so that's going to be interesting. Becca, I know you're an hour away. Any chance of you going up this weekend?
Now that I saw that the first game was canceled and they do have this game and it's not till 7 o'clock.
Yeah, it is a 7 o'clock start.
I might actually try and make that after work. I'll see how the rest of the week goes, and I might actually try and go up there for that one.
Yeah, just make
it's
sure
a really
that
big bummer. I have to work Friday night. It's not making me happy.
Tanner, you would, since you have to go an extra mile now to go to the game, you wouldn't try to go to that game.
It's not terrible. You know, it's not bad.
That long pause just nailed it for me. Just saying that right now. So, yeah, looking at the next five games, we got a three-game series this weekend against Ohio State. I think this is going to be a huge series for Purdue just to get off. You know, it's Big Ten baseball. I know Big Ten baseball is not really, you know, premier like the SEC and a couple of little conferences in the South, but you know, there's still some good baseball teams, and Ohio State's one of them. So right. I think you're going to see where Purdue kind of stands in the Big Ten with this three-game series at home. I think there's going to be a lot of motion, especially for, you know, the players that were on the team last year. They were hoping to play in this field last year. A couple setbacks in the construction didn't allow that to happen, so they're having the inaugural this season. And, you know, Tuesday it was cold out, I guess you would say it. Not rained out. Cold out?
No, it was cold. It was in, like, the 20s. It was sunny out.
It was sunny, but it was cold. The wind chill was probably -5 degrees. So, you know, aluminum bats nowadays, you know, if you hit the ball the wrong way, ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, there were a couple of those in that Evansville game. You could see the guys have to, you know, walk away from the plate after hitting a foul ball.
Especially,
I would freeze your wrists, man.
I was going to go to the UIC game, and we had freezing rain the Saturday morning of, and I was like, how are they going to play the game? And they actually snuck it in. It kind of warmed up to like 25 to 30 degrees, and they had the game. I'm sorry I kind of missed it. Kind of wanted to go see it because that was the game they ended up winning, 17-10. But looking at the schedule ahead, we got a three-game series this weekend versus Ohio State. Then a week from a week from today, they're at home at 6 p.m. against IPFW, and then they have a three-game series next weekend at Penn State. So we're in Big Ten play right now with a couple of non-conference games in the middle of the week. So this is where it gets interesting and kind of gets a little funner.
That's right.
More fun. Let's put it that way.
More fun. There you go.
Funner.
Get that English going.
Yeah. I speak old English.
Okay.
There you go.
Anyways, you guys ready for a break?
Yep.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk some NFL and NFL free agency, which started yesterday.
It actually started last week, but anyways.
Oh, yeah, we did start last week. Hello. I mean, we're going to talk about things that happened a week ago. Right. Steve, you got to figure out your script.
I know.
But yeah, free agency started last week. Anyway, we'll talk about the moves made by certain teams, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Sports Night.
Sports Night keeps you up to date with Purdue athletics and with news from the world of sports.
Drinking a German beer with a Cuban cigar in the middle of Paris with a Dominican bar. Great head on her shoulder, she probably studied abroad. She transferred to Harvard from King's College in March. She says that I'm her favorite cause she admires the art. Michelangelo with the flow, Picasso with the bar. She's well put together like a piece by Gershwin. Renaissance style, tonight is picture perfect. So smile and pack your bags real good, baby, cause you'll be gone for a while. Wow, wow. Girl, tell me how you feel. What's your fantasy, yo? I see us on the beach down in Mexico. You can put your feet up, be my senorita. We ain't gotta rush, just take it slow. You'll be in the highlight, soaking up the sunlight. Anything you want, it's yours. I'll have you living life like you should. You say you never had it so good. First class cabin fever, 5-hour layovers from Norway to Egypt. I'm to the point like the pyramids of Giza. Still I'm to the left like the tower out in Pisa. I'm feeling single, baby, I could use a feature. Swagger like Caesar, I'll get you a visa. We can go to Italy and maybe see the Colosseum. I'll be Da Vinci if you be my Mona Lisa. And I smile, so pack your bags real good, baby, cause you'll be gone for a while. Spin the globe, wherever it lands, that's where we'll go. We'll hit up Europe, yeah, and spend some euros. Or maybe visit Berlin, the walls with the murals. This is your month, baby, sign of the Virgo. Private reservations, glasses full of Merlot. A rosé, a burgundy, traveling like turbo. Brush up on your Espanol, we're Barcelona bound for smile. So pack your bags real good, baby, cause you'll be gone for a while. Wow, wow.
Welcome back to Sports Night. Right now we're going to dive into some NFL talk as the NFL free agency is up and going. It's been going on for a little bit over a week now. First, let's talk about our beloved Chicago Bears. There's been quite a few offensive upgrades. They signed tight end Martellus Bennett to a four-year deal. I think his nickname is the Black Unicorn. Am I wrong?
It is.
I like that. I already like that.
If you are on Twitter, follow him. I'll look up his Twitter.
I followed him.
It's hysterical.
He's awesome.
Is he as good as the one? There's a Purdue guy that tweets hilarious stuff. Kevin Ballinger. I don't know if you guys follow him on Twitter. He's got some hilarious tweets.
Yeah. No, but you're right, Steve. I started following him last week, and he's hilarious.
Yeah, it's just the things he comes out. And he has his own YouTube site. This guy's a character.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, last year with the Giants, he played all 16 games. He had 55 receptions. He was targeted 90 times by Eli Manning. He had 626 yards receiving with 5 touchdowns. He's a big red zone threat. The other big signing the Bears made was offensive tackle Jermon Bushrod to a 5-year deal from the New Orleans Saints. He went to 2 Pro Bowls with them over the last 6 seasons. And I guess another big thing that happened today is the Bears announced that they could not finish negotiations with Brian Urlacher, and therefore he will either retire or become a free agent. And I guess I'm assuming he's going to try and become a free agent, because if he wanted to retire, I'm assuming he would have announced that if he couldn't get a deal with the Bears. So no more Brian Urlacher in Chicago. Those are the 3 big things going on with Chicago. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Becca.
I was just going to say, I mean, about the Brian Urlacher thing, I mean, has anyone even expressed interest in him at this point?
Agent's been doing a lot of talking.
I think Minnesota said they were interested, but I don't think anybody.
Of Urlacher's agent.
Trying to get the
pot going with the Bears. But
do you guys really think he'll go anywhere?
He doesn't want to retire. He reportedly offered the Bears. He wanted to come back for around $5 million a year for a one or two year deal. $5 million a year, so around 10, 11 and a half with signing bonuses and all that crap. Bears offered him around $2 to $2.5 million, reportedly, just for a 1-year contract. You know, reality check for Brian Urlacher, he's not worth that. He's not worth the $5 million.
No, he's not.
The 2 is going to be probably the best he's going to get.
I think he's going to realize that in the next coming weeks.
Too. He can't move anymore, guys. How can you be a middle linebacker in the league when you can't run on your knee?
Exactly. Yeah, he's not a sideline-to-sideline linebacker.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, he, and I feel bad for Brian Urlacher, because I remember the first time he hurt that knee was on that fluke Hail Mary at the end of the season 2 years ago, when I think it was at idiot, what was it? It was one of the white safeties we have, which I hate. Either Chris Steltzer, I forget who, or it might have even been Chris Conte, which Conte's not that bad.
No,
but somebody fell on his knee, and it's like, oh, and I thought, you know, you could tell it was bad from there, because he was walking off,
just
with, you know, and it's
when he saw.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, and you knew that could be starting towards the end of Brian Urlacher. And, you know, it is tough that he's not going to end in Chicago. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he does end up signing with the team. Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of his career kind of pulls a Jeff Saturday and may sign a 1-day deal with the Bears.
Like, you know, Alex Brown.
Yeah,
Alex,
like
Brown,
Alex
did the
Brown.
Exact same thing this year.
Exactly. So it wouldn't surprise me. But like I said, if Urlacher is really hoping for a $5 million a year, he's never going to get it.
Right.
No one in the NFL will pay that.
Looking at the key signings offensively, the offensive upgrades, if you want to call them, tight end Martellus Bennett. We all know about Kellen Davis and...
oh, God.
Yeah. Just, we know that experience and always being on the ground when the ball's thrown to him. But, you know, Martellus Bennett...
Where's he at? Oh, he's face down.
Yeah, he's face down on the ground. Bennett, a very, you know, a key red zone target for Eli Manning. I know Eli Manning had a terrible year last year, so, you know, Bennett's numbers might not look all impressive for a tight end and for what we're paying for him, but I think this guy's exactly what what the Bears needed.
And he's huge.
And he's huge. And
he was like 6'6".
And he can run block, which the Bears would love, because then you could keep him out there and the team's not going to know if it's
whether it's going to be a runner or a pass.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot
exactly.
of teams switch out for a running, you know, a run blocking tight end for a passing, you know, catching tight end. So
and what
you
do you
kind of teams can kind of judge defensively, you know, what kind of play is it going to be from the offense?
Right. I mean, one thing I was going to say about Kellen Davis real quick, and then I have a comment that I'm going to say about Jay Cutler in a second here.
Uh-oh.
I remember, no, this is good stuff. But the one Kellen Davis moment I will always remember is I was watching the Houston game, and it was like the first or second series the Bears had. And Cutler snaps the ball, and he starts scrambling because, you know, the offensive line's terrible. And he throws this 5-yard pass to Davis, who catches it, turns around, and gets hit and fumbles.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, the guy can't do anything right. Right.
So, I got the ball.
I got the ball. Boom. That's seriously what happened. He caught it, turned around, and just got rocked, and it was a fumble. It's like, oh.
Right.
So, it's great that Bennett's coming in. But what I read today on NFL.com is that the Bears are going to be running a read option with Jay Cutler next year.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
I saw that. Yeah, they were talking about
that. I don't
think
they're going to use it as much, and, you know, I think that's just going to be... Because Cutler's, I mean, he's got the speed, he's got the athleticism.
Right.
To be an out-of-the-pocket quarterback, kind of a scrambler type.
Kind of made me cringe about the health, though, because he's had those concussion problems the last two years.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, I can just see him getting rocked once or twice.
Right. You know, and turning into a, you know, Michael Vick, who...
Yeah.
Who's our backup? Do we have a backup?
They're still...
Well, Jason Campbell was only signed for one year,
so right now it's up in the air. I would have thought maybe the Bears would try and get Matt Hassel back.
Right.
But the Colts signed him just a couple days ago, so
right. We'll
see. You know, there's still free agents. There's still a lot of free agents out there, and you got the draft coming up at the end of April. Offensive tackle for Jerome Bushrod. I think it's a great deal. We got that left tackle to help Jay Cutler's blind side.
Oh yeah,
two-time Pro Bowler, exactly what the Bears needed. You know, a lot of people have been saying, you know, been skeptical about Bushrod because, you know, he was a lineman for Drew Brees, and we all know the capabilities of Drew Brees getting out of the pocket, you know, not folding under pressure, and, you know, his ability to make plays. Well, you know, in reality, Jay Cutler can do the same thing because look at what he's had to play with. You know, look who's
he's pretty much scrambling
right,
every
look
play.
Who's been protecting him, you know, the past couple years.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a perfect fit for this Bears offense and the.
It'd be good to get a veteran out there.
Exactly. I mean, all these linemen that are out there right now. I mean, you like them. I mean, you hope Gabe Kareemi can stay healthy. You know, you have Jamarcus Webb. You have, you know, but really the only veteran they have is Roberto Garza.
Yeah.
You know, who's been with the team for a long time. So it's like all these linemen that they're flopping in and out. It's like nobody has any confidence in any of these guys.
Right.
And like you said, Mike, you bring in a veteran like Bushrod's been to the Pro Bowl two times. You know, he has authority. He knows how to block. You know, it's good to get some veterans in on this line to kind of take the lead and show these young guys how to do it, you know?
Right. That's it so far for the Bears. I know they've been making a couple changes. Right now, it's I think with these signings, it's up in the air.
Yeah,
right.
I actually
that 20th pick.
I would love for them to still sign Fluker though, because I mean,
heard
you
they
could,
were good.
Go ahead. No,
I was gonna say I actually heard today that the Bears were also looking at Zbikowski.
Oh yeah, he was released from the.
Tom Zbikowski.
Yeah, last week he was released.
Yeah,
from the
and I heard that the Bears were interested.
He has just a lot of health issues, and he was just never healthy for that Colts defense last year to be consistent.
Right.
That's why I think in the end the Colts just, you know, let him walk.
Kind of like what they did with Bob Sanders.
Yeah,
I mean, granted, Bob Sanders was always injured. I wouldn't compare Zbikowski to Sanders,
right.
But. Same thing.
Exactly. It was like the Mike Brown here in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, nobody wanted him to lead, but he could never play.
Right.
So
hell of an athlete, but just couldn't. He was injury prone.
Exactly.
So, right now, I think the first pick for the Bears, you know, the 20th pick in the first round, is up in the air. I mean, a lot of people, you know, we all heard the talk that the Bears talked to Matt Tateo. God no, please, Jesus, God no. you know, I could see them going the offensive line route, but they could also, you know, right now they don't have a linebacker, and there's
right.
not many free agents out there, you know, who Bears fans are going to be. I could see it now when the Bears do sign a linebacker, there's going to be so much comparison between the linebacker they sign and Brian Urlacher. You can't do that.
No.
No one's going to be Brian Urlacher anymore. Brian Urlacher, he's going to have his jersey retired up in, you know, in Soldier Field. It's over and done with. Just like in Baltimore. There's not going to be another Ray Lewis.
There's not going to be the next Ray Lewis in one season,
So stop putting the pressure on the new guy, trying to, you got to play up to the potential of, you know, that Brian Urlacher played up to, that Ray Lewis played up to. You can't do that. You're just going to add pressure on the guy. And, you know, that player might not play up to his potential due to all the pressure on him.
Right.
Yep.
Well, let's jump. You know, we talked about the Bears for a while. Let's jump to another huge team that's had a huge free agency, and a lot of people are talking about them being Super Bowl contenders. And I think it's a really good reality that they might be. The Seattle Seahawks, they traded 3 draft picks for Minnesota wide receiver Percy Harvin, who's had his injury problems, but he's a great returner. He's had a good career receiving wise. He has 280 receptions for 3,302 yards and 20 touchdowns. And right now, Seattle's offense consists of Russell Wilson, who was, you know, arguably the best rookie last year. I mean, all the attention went to Robert Griffin III and Andrew Luck, but Wilson quietly tied the NFL record for rookie touchdowns. Sidney Rice, Marshawn Lynch, Gordon Tate, Zach Miller, Doug Baldwin, and obviously along with Percy Harvin, this could be one of the top offenses in the league next year. Not to mention their defense is young and was in the top 10 in pretty much all defensive categories last year. So what do you guys think? Is this like the most complete team in the NFC now?
49ers better watch out.
Yeah. I mean, that division is stacked
because
with those two teams.
Oh, yeah.
With the read option that that offense ran this past season.
Right.
To add Percy Harvin to go along with Marshawn Lynch, Golden Tate, the players you mentioned, Tanner.
Right.
Ooh, I mean, Percy Harvin last year had 280 receptions for just a little over 3,300 yards and 20 TDs. Excuse me, that's over his career.
His career, that'd be a pretty good year.
I
was going to say, I was like,
a hell
that's
of a career.
That's pretty good.
But, you know, little injuries over the last couple of years have limited him on his ability to be the kind of player he wants to be and what the Minnesota Vikings obviously wanted from him. So I think this change is going to really help Percy Harvin become the player he wants to be. And I think the Seahawks really, to trade only three draft picks, it's kind of like the Bears and Brandon Marshall. I mean, we only traded two third-round picks for him. So I think Seahawks got a steal on this, and watch out. I mean, teams are making, this team's making moves. It's going to be, the West.
It's going to be a tough
competition. A couple of years ago was the crappiest division. And
right,
they were the joke.
Back when the Seahawks made they made the playoffs with the 7-9 record,
7-9
right?
record, exactly.
Yeah, right.
And now, to have, San Francisco in the Super Bowl, and now have Seattle potentially being, fighting for that division title, fighting for that wild card spot. Seattle's a team to be reckoned with.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely.
And they are definitely a Super Bowl contender.
Agreed.
Hands down.
We can jump on the AFC boat for a little bit here. The Miami Dolphins signed Mike Wallace, who was a beast up in Pittsburgh for years. He has 235 career receptions for 4,042 yards, 32 touchdowns. He made the Pro Bowl back in 2011. He's a very, very fast receiver. And, Ryan Tannehill needs all the help he can get going into his second year down there in Miami. What do you think that's going to help him at all? Are they going to be able to – it's going to be tough. That division is always has the Patriots. The Jets are trying to rebuild. Who knows what they're going to do? Do you think that the Dolphins have a shot? Does this help their offense?
Becca?
I mean, anything is going to be an improvement. So, I think that was a big pickup for them, and I think it's definitely going to help them improve over the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Wallace had a little bit of a... I mean, I'm not going to say it's a character issue, but, he kind of went sour with the Steelers fan base last year, kind of holding
right.
out.
Yeah, with that holdout, and then,
I mean, granted, career-wise, he's got 235 receptions for just a little over 4,000 yards and 32 touchdowns. I believe he's only been in the league 3 years, if I'm not mistaken.
He's pretty young, yeah, so
yeah,
he's got some really
young.
Good stats.
And, to have those stats kind of match Percy Harvin and that kind of talent level, I'm shocked. I'm not shocked, but I am shocked that the Steelers didn't try and keep him, but I think there was a little bit of a character issue there, especially at the incident that happened last year. So, I think, the Dolphins made the right move. I still don't think they're a playoff caliber team yet. I still think they got to do a couple moves, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They were in the bad half of the league defensively, 27th in opponent passing yards, 13th, not bad, 13th in opposing rushing yards, giving up about 109 yards per game.
Right.
Passing was pretty much dead last, 26th in the league, so Mike Wallace is definitely going to help Ryan Tannehill. It's going to help Ryan Tannehill because now he has his number one target along. They did lose Reggie Bush, so they got to find someone to help along. You can't just be a one-dimensional team and just have a passing game. You have to have a rushing attack. And, everyone's saying, the NFL's, it's a new era. It's a passing league now. Teams still have to run. So
right.
I think it's, they lost Reggie Bush. They gained Mike Wallace. I still think they need a couple more pieces. They need a running back and maybe another good second or third spot wide receiver. And I think Miami could
could potentially play up to the AFC East along with New England, New York, and Buffalo. You know, right now New England's been running away with the division the last couple of years. So, you know, to give New England hell one season, I think would be a good sign of change for that division.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, somebody needs to challenge New England for that, you know, the throne of the East.
Right. That's pretty much the big signings that I wanted to talk about. I know the NFL came out with a rule change today about the tuck rule. They threw that out, but the helmet for a running back outside the tackle box cannot lower his head upon an opposing defender to kind of run over him, so to speak.
Right.
And you know, give him a big head jolt. I think it is a good rule, but a terrible rule too. It's kind of, you know,
it's going to be hard to enforce.
Exactly. The referee, it's just going to.
What are teams going to do on the goal line? Like, how are you going to call it? Because who doesn't do that on the goal line?
Well, that's still inside the tackle box.
Well, the good thing is, yeah, most of the time that's in the tackle box, unless like running.
I mean, but
out.
Unless you're doing like a stretch or a toss.
Well, yeah, but I mean, here's the thing: they had to eventually do something to counteract how the defense is getting affected by this new NFL. Because yeah. I mean, up until this year, defenders can't do anything. You know, they're getting flagged every time somebody hits somebody when they're trying to catch a ball. You know, defenders getting flagged. I mean, they had to eventually do something to kind of try and level this out.
What do you do when both of them lower their heads?
Then maybe you have offsetting penalties.
It,
I don't know.
Both mics. To be honest, it's just going to extend the game a little bit longer. It's going to take some time. I think the first year, you know, this coming year, it's going to be that you're going to have a lot of bad calls. You're going to have, you know, a lot of right calls. You know,
which is what you had with the defensive plays too. I mean, when you saw the replays, people always complain.
Exactly, and you know, opinions of different, you know. Player, you know, people watching the game from TV or in the suite, they have access to video replay, whereas a ref sees it at
doesn't have that.
You know, it's live. It's happening so fast that, you know, you got to make that judgment right away. You don't have the slow mo. You don't have, you know, ten different angles at the at the play. So, you know, the NFL is kind of stuck right now because a lot of people are suing them because of, you know, withholding knowledge that, you know, you're not trying to make the player safe and all that, and they're trying now, you know, unfortunately the game is changing a little bit because of these safety, you know, these rules that are helping the player's safety. So, you know, yeah, it's going to hurt the game, but in the end, you know, NFL is going to say, hey, we're trying to make this game as safe as it can be while still maintaining what the NFL is supposed to be all about.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's an interesting rule. I think you're going to see, I mean, once preseason comes along and we get a couple preseason games in, I think you're going to see, you know, kind of more, you know, kind of see how the refs are going to, you know, call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it's just, you know, it's a stupid, you know, you know, you see on Twitter, oh, it's a stupid rule and all that. Wait until the games, you know, are being played to see how the rules actually,
you know, enforced. Yeah.
Right. Agreed.
So, that's the NFL as of right now. I know we got the draft coming up right about a month now from now. Mm-hmm. So, it's going to be interesting to see a couple of our high top prospects having their pro day at their respective colleges. I'm still waiting to. I still can't wait for that Matt Taito pro day at Notre Dame to see what his 40 is. And, you know, he ran that. What was it?
The 4.82.
4.82.
Oh, I better find some jets.
I guarantee you, somehow he runs a 4.6, 4.55, or something of that sort.
Oh yeah, he's probably been doing sprints ever since that
Whoever you know is keeping time for Notre Dame that day is going to get a lot of money. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Anyways, you guys ready for our final break?
Absolutely. Yep. We're going to take one last break. Up next, we'll talk some news of the world of sports in our segment, Headline Crossfire. You're listening to Sports Night.
You are listening to Purdue's number one sports talk radio show, Sports Night.
welcome back to Sports Night. Right now it's time for our segment, Headline Crossfire.
Where's the sound effects?
Well, I mean, you can't cue them like you used to, Steve. What the heck? This is ridiculous. How's that? All right. What?
That's as good as it's going to get.
That's as good as it's going to get, yeah. That's pretty good. All right, anyway, Madness is set up. The NCAA tournament is scheduled to start tomorrow afternoon. You guys, who's in your Final Four?
Well, the tournament has already started. But the part that matters is round two.
Yeah,
not the playing games.
Yeah.
But supposedly James Madison won, and every Purdue fan is trying to get James Madison gear because that's who Indiana plays first is James Madison. They won their game against I don't even know who they played in their first game.
They played the 20-loss team Liberty, I believe.
Oh, maybe that was it. No, 20-win Liberty.
20-loss.
No.
A 20-loss team isn't in the tournament. You kidding me?
Are you serious? Liberty was a 20-loss team that won their conference tournament.
They had 13 losses.
I heard on TV they were talking about Liberty being a 20-loss team.
Who were you watching?
It was on ESPN.
Oh, yeah, they were. They were 15-20.
I was looking
at the wrong team.
Yes.
Sorry.
Told you. That's all right.
Anyways, looking at my bracket.
Wait. I'm sorry. They won their conference at 6-10?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
They won their tournament. Like
their tournament.
Their tournament, yeah.
I thought they won their conference. I'm like, they went 6-10. What kind of conference is that?
No, yeah, they were the second 20-loss team to make the tournament.
Oh my God. Well, that's why they didn't get past the first round.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, looking at my bracket, it was pretty difficult for me. The two regions that really, took me a while, I guess, was definitely the South. I'm trying to think of which one the other one is now that I filled out my bracket. I believe it was the
West. The West was hard.
The West was a little bit hard. South and Midwest gave me some difficulty, I felt. But my Final Four, as of right now, I might make changes before tomorrow, but as of right now, it's Louisville coming out of the Midwest. Coming out of the West, Ohio State. In the East, Miami. And from the South, Florida. And in my national championship game, I have Louisville versus Miami. And I have Louisville winning.
Very good.
That's as of right now, but that could change.
Subject to change. Asterisk.
Yeah, TB determined.
That's fair.
Before 12:15 tomorrow, which everyone should have their brackets in on the Sports Night Bracket Challenge.
So, all right, who's up? Me or
Becca,
you?
Let's go.
All right, my Final Four, I have Duke from the Midwest,
God,
Ohio State from the West, Miami from the East, and Kansas from the South. And I have Duke and Kansas in the championship game, and I've kind of been back and forth on this. I originally had Kansas. Now I think I'm going to stick with Duke.
Coach
K.
Coach K.
Duke. Ugh.
They're a tournament team.
I hate Duke.
They're always good in the tournament.
Who cares?
Tournament.
Okay, so what I have Louisville from the Midwest. From the West, I have Ohio State. I guess where none of us are original there. From the South, I have Georgetown. And from the East, I have Indiana. Let's see here. And then in my final, I've got Louisville versus Indiana, which I have Indiana winning it all.
Okay. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, that is kind of unfortunate.
I think they're the best overall team.
You blew it!
I got to be honest with you.
It just takes one bad game, though.
It does.
Yeah, that
and
it does.
They've had them this year.
Who is your first number one seed out?
Ooh, my first number one seed out. That's a good one. I got to go with... I think I'm going to go with Gonzaga.
I have three of my number one seeds losing in the round of 16.
Yeah, actually, I do too.
I have Gonzaga losing to Bucky, Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
I have Kansas losing to Michigan. And I have IU losing to Syracuse.
Yeah, I have Gonzaga losing to Kansas State and IU losing to Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. I got Gonzaga losing to Wisconsin. And then where do I have here? I have Kansas losing to VCU.
Okay. Ooh. We got VCU going out Shaka. There again.
Yeah, I have VCU Shaka playing Georgetown. Yeah. Shaka. He's a good coach, man.
He is. I
mean, he always has his VCU guys playing.
He's a smart coach.
He's quite the smart coach.
Get it?
Yes, I get it. God, that was terrible. Anyways, those are our final fours. I'll post them on Twitter. I'll post my bracket from the bracket challenge. Tanner, you got to get your name into that bracket challenge.
Yeah, I'm going to do that later tonight.
Yeah, you better. I'll call you at midnight tonight and make sure.
Yeah, Steve will send me alerts.
After the Blackhawks game. But yeah, that's our final fours. I'll post them on Twitter and see if you guys can beat us.
Absolutely.
See if you can beat the president. See if you can beat Kid President. I posted that video. I don't know if you guys watch Kid President.
No,
that little kid's awesome, and he picked his final four. I think he was with Andy Katz from ESPN.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, watch the video. It's pretty cool. He picks his final four team, the little kid, and we all know the president picked. I think he picked IU to win. So
where's our sports night thing?
I don't know. Look for sports night. Sports tweets. PU sports tweets.
No, I'm on. I guess, okay, sports. We can't do this through Facebook?
Yeah, you can. Just look on our Facebook page. But we'll get to that later, Tanner.
I'm trying to do two things at once. I'm trying to multitask on
all right,
you guys.
We're moving on. All right, so right now, the Miami Heat, hate to say it.
They were looking bad
They were looking bad, but now they have taken a lead over the Cleveland Cavaliers. Right now, the Miami Heat are on a 23-game winning streak. There was a lot of debate last week on ESPN, all the sports radio shows, talk shows, TV shows. Which winning streak was the most impressive? Miami Heat currently at 23, looks to be 24, or the Chicago Blackhawks? I know we're all Blackhawks fans here, so it might be a little bit biased, but hopefully we can keep, our favorite teams aside. The Chicago Blackhawks had a 24-game streak worth at least a point, and that was from the start of the season. That was half of the season. There's only 48 games in this shortened season. Blackhawks had 24 straight games, half the season, with at least a point to open the season. So which guys was the most impressive and currently, or is currently the most impressive?
You know, I have to go. I mean, back in the day when they asked this question, like every day, like you said on SportsCenter,
yeah.
You said the Blackhawks. But as of right now, I mean, 23 games, and like you said, they came back against the Cavs, and it looks for the most part like they'll win. We'll still see. But it's got to be the Cavaliers now, because a win streak is way more impressive than a point streak. Because granted, the Hawks hadn't lost the game in regulation. They lost games in overtime and in shootouts.
Right.
So it's just not the same. And so I've got to give it. I mean, as much as I'd love to keep it with the Blackhawks, you got to tip the cap to the Heat.
Backup?
I'm the same way. I mean, I think, ours, we did lose a couple games in the shootouts. But I think that hockey is way more demanding than NBA is. I think, the constant physical skating, getting slammed in the boards. The Hawks had a bunch of back-to-back games, which is also very demanding. I just think, for hockey, going that long without having a game where your team has just been so exhausted from previous games that they were able to keep that streak alive as long as they did, I think for hockey, that was a huge streak.
Right. Becker, you kind of nailed it there, too. I mean, the Blackhawks, they only had 5 days to gear up for the season. Five preseason, practices, pretty much, leading up to the beginning of the season. So they had barely any time to, gear up, make sure everyone was game ready. Fortunately, Blackhawks had a lot of players play in the minor league and the AHL, and we all know Patrick Kane went over to Switzerland. So a lot of players on the team, played elsewhere and was able to keep, conditioned and everything. Even Jonathan Toews, I know he didn't play anywhere, but he was able to bring the team together and have, conditioning workouts and whatnot. And so to go 24 straight games to open the season with at least a point, I think is a tremendous feat for any team. And the Blackhawks, the record, what was the original record? 17? By the Philadelphia, I forgot who the team was. It was so long ago. But, it was very impressive for the Chicago Blackhawks, but I got to give it to the Miami Heat now, And the difference is, Miami Heat, they always have the best player on the court. Whereas in hockey, it's not always the case. But to go 24 games straight with a win, not a loss, and not a loss in overtime, shootout, whatnot. Just to go 24 straight games with a win, I think it's unheard of. It's just, you know, it's kind of freaky. So I'm going to give it to the Miami Heat, and, you know, hopefully the Blackhawks get a big win tonight against the Anaheim Mighty Ducks.
They playing on the pond? Is it still called the pond in Anaheim?
It might be. I don't know. They ever since that changed from the Mighty Ducks and, you know, Anaheim, you know, a lot of things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Well, the Chicago Bulls guard Derrick Rose said last Tuesday he still isn't sure if he will return for the court this season, but he said the last hurdle is a mental rather than physical as he recovers from surgery on his left ACL. The Chicago Bulls came out last week that the doctors have in fact cleared Rose to return to the court. So what do you guys think is going on in Chicago on this?
You know, we talked a little bit about this before, you know, during our break. I just think that Derrick Rose is really just trying to play this smart. You know, I think he realizes the team's terrible. I mean, it's not terrible, but I mean, it's not a good team. And quite frankly, adding him for, you know, games before the playoffs isn't going to make any difference. Right. This team isn't going to get past the Heat. So bottom line is Derrick Rose is playing the smart decision and just is going to sit it out this year because he knows it's not where they're not winning the championship this year. Bottom line, with or without him, so he's not going to risk anything. I think it's a smart move.
Right, I agree with you, Tanner. You know, us coming from Purdue, knowing about the whole Robbie Homo situation, I don't care if Derrick Rose, you know, takes the first couple weeks off in the next season to make sure he's mentally prepared for this. Because, you know, being Purdue fans, we all know Robbie Hummel and his two ACL injuries. If I'm the Bulls, I give Derrick Rose all the time. Because like you said, Tanner, the Bulls, even with Rose, will not beat the Heat.
Right.
It's fact. They wouldn't even beat the Indianapolis Pacers, who are playing tremendous basketball right now. And I think could give the Heat a run for their money, but I still think the Heat are the team to beat coming out of the Eastern Conference. But if I'm the Bulls, I give Derrick Rose all the time in the world to come back and make sure he's mentally prepared. But in the back of my mind, to get over this mentally, you know, getting ready, mentally, you know, being able to jump off the left foot, you know, jump for a dunk and all that, and, you know, cut left, cut right, cut whichever way you want, make sure you're mentally ready, you know, making sure you're mentally knowing that your knee is fully capable of doing what you want to do, I think you got to get out on the basketball court too.
Absolutely.
And so I could see a lot of fans' frustration. I could see where the Bulls' frustration is too, because the only way you're going to get over that mental leap is, you know, getting back into the game. And so I, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, it's a little bit Derrick Rose's fault, but I still think Bulls should allow him all the time in the world.
Absolutely, I agree.
Becca, you got anything to add real quick?
No, I mean, I'm on the same page as all you guys. Like you said, you know, they're not going to go anywhere in the playoffs this year at this point. Is it really worth the risk of putting him in?
Right. No, it's not. And like I said before, this team, even with Rose, cannot beat the Miami Heat. And, you know, I'm looking down the line. A lot of people are saying, look for this Bulls team to be competitive in the 2015 season. I think I said this before on the show 2 weeks ago. 2015 is going to be a great year for Chicago sports. I mean, supposedly the Cubs are going to be ready. You never know about the Bears.
Right.
You got the Bulls, hopefully, in 2015. Who knows about the White Sox? And the Blackhawks are always going to be in the playoffs. So
exactly.
2015 could be a hell of a year for Chicago sports. If all goes to plan.
Mm-hmm.
But we know we are Chicago, and, you know, we are Cubs fans, so we know anything can happen. Especially 109 years, nothing can happen. So,
right.
All right, Tanner. I know you got we've had a big texting conversation the last 24 hours. I'll let you introduce this next topic. Go ahead.
I guess it's pretty simple. The mayor of Rosemont, Illinois, which is pretty much right around where O'Hare is. It's where all those casinos are, and
20 minutes from downtown without traffic.
Right. Apparently, the mayor's offered the Cubs a deal to come move to Rosemont. They'll get like a 24-25 acre plot of land for free, and they'll be able to do whatever the heck they want with it, you know, parking wise and all that good stuff.
And so apparently that deal's been offered, and now the Cubs have to try and figure out if they want to, you know, get a deal done with Chicago, or now that they have the second option, they could hypothetically move to Rosemont, Illinois, and play there. So that's really what's going on right now.
So what's your initial thought?
My personal initial thought?
Right.
It kind of makes me a little bit nervous. You know, I think bottom line, I think the number one priority needs to be to stay in Wrigleyville, just because of the atmosphere. I mean, we all know going to Cubs games, you know, the atmosphere around Wrigley Field can never be duplicated.
Right.
I mean, you're never going to bring that to Rosemont with all the bars and restaurants and things to do outside Wrigley Field. It's like an extravaganza, so to speak.
Right.
So that's never going to be duplicated. My biggest concern, you know, and I think it's great. I mean, the number one thing that comes out of this is the Cubs now have leverage.
Right.
Because now they can go to the alderman. What's his name? You know his name off the top of your head?
I don't, but I know who
you're talking about. They can go to him and say, look, either you're going to give us what we want or at least negotiate more than you have, or else we're getting the hell out of here and you're going to have absolutely nothing and you guys are going to be screwed.
Right.
So, I mean, at least it's leverage. It makes me nervous if they will move to Rosemont just because, I don't know. I mean, will Cubs fans migrate? Yes. But my concern is that not as many will, because a lot of people go to be at Wrigleyville, let's be honest.
Right.
When the Cubs lose 100 games, people aren't going to watch them play baseball. They're going to be in the atmosphere.
They're going to get drunk.
Exactly. And can you do that at Rosemont? I mean, of course you can.
There's Harry Carey's in Rosemont.
Okay.
We're all set. We're halfway there.
So I don't know. I have mixed feelings. I know you guys are kind of okay with it or whatever. I kind of have. I'm a little bit more skeptical.
Right. I'm looking more towards it towards the business end of it, because the Chicago Cubs are a business. They're not an amusement park. I know they pay an amusement tax in the city of Chicago, which they don't see any of that money back from the city. And
that's a lot, isn't it? Like 17% or something.
I think it's
17% on each ticket.
Something like that. Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is.
The Chicago White Sox deal with it, though. Okay.
Yeah, but they don't have to deal with. They could do whatever they want to their ballpark.
Oh yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get.
But that's because their ballpark's
the thing.
In the middle, you know.
Looking at it from like a business end, the Chicago Cubs have a contract with the rooftop owners, and the rooftop owners, the Chicago Cubs want to add more advertising, which Rick Riley, I know we talked about this article. He wrote an article about why Wrigley is dooming the Cubs, but Ricketts have said it would bring $30 million, or right around thereabouts, of money towards them from the advertising it, but the advertising signs would obstruct the view from the rooftop. So the rooftop owners are all in a fuss about this, and they're not budging on their contract. And, you know, they have specific words saying, you know, nothing is supposed to be changed, nothing is supposed to obstruct the view, and nothing, you know, all legal terms and all that crap. So they got, you know, those group of people, the rooftop owners. Now you got the city of Chicago. They're fussy about it because, you know, it's a landmark in Chicago. They don't want authorize a lot of change. They don't want to pay for it either. The Ricketts have said they've fork over $300 million just to do the renovations. Now all of a sudden, in the last couple of weeks, restaurant owners have grouped together saying, Cubs are offering. They want more. They want about 30 more night games, especially on a Saturday. Well, restaurant owners say that's going to kill their business because 1:20, 2:05 first pitch games, and right around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, most fans go right to the bars, right to the restaurants, and get dinner. So I could see from their end. So, the Cubs are a business, but they're being restricted by other businesses. What do most businesses do when that happens? They move. So, from a business end, it would make sense. I think it would make sense for the Cubs to move to Rosemont. Do I want them to go to Rosemont? As a fan, I still don't know.
It's tough. I mean, it's tough because, like I said, you'd like to keep the Cubs and Wrigley
separate because
the Cubs are the Cubs and Wrigley's Wrigley.
Right.
But as much as you'd like to do that, the fact is they've been so much of the same thing for so long.
The Cubs will stay in Wrigley, I believe, 98% of the time. I think they use this as leverage to, get the city of Chicago, scare the living daylights out of the rooftop owners and restaurant owners, saying, "Hey, we got this free 24 acres of land.
Right.
We'll move. We can, because we have, yeah, we have bottom line is, to spend on the stadium."
Right. Because, yeah, bottom line is you can complain as much as you want about, oh, we'll lose revenue if you have night games. We'll lose revenue if you put signs up. But at least they'll still be getting revenue if the Cubs stay.
Right.
I mean, if the Cubs leave, they lose.
Nothing. Right.
They're gonna, the people are going to wonder why they have bleachers on the top of their building.
Right.
Yeah, there's going to be nothing to show. Okay.
Becker, what's your take on it?
I'm the same way. I mean, you got to use it for leverage. But, you know, the other thing I've always thought of is, you know, Wrigley's going to need to be renovated, you know, gutted at some point in time.
Right.
Where can the Cubs play for one season? I mean, the Bears were able to play at U of I for a season when they gutted Soldier Field. Where are the Cubs going to be able to play?
Right.
I mean, are they going to have to somehow work with Major League Baseball to get a schedule that works to where the Cubs can play at the Cell?
Well, the thing that helps is...
Go ahead, Steve.
You got a nice, beautiful stadium 100 miles north, which is, most fans know it as Wrigley North in Milwaukee. That's, I mean, you play 160 games there. I think it could work.
Can you really do that, though? Like,
I don't know.
I mean, because baseball games, unlike, I mean, you can kind of do, you can do that with basketball. The Clippers and Lakers do it, you know, whoever, there's teams that share courts. But, and same thing with basketball and hockey, like, the Blackhawks and the Blackhawks and the Bulls both have the United Center, but that's half the games. I mean, could two teams really share the same baseball field?
Right. I mean,
because there's so many games that happen every day.
Right. I mean, the initial step right now is to get the city of Chicago to okay the renovations. The next step is going to be talking with MLB officials, saying where can we play 80 games for our home game.
Right.
You know, and I don't think it will be difficult because we all remember that Carlos Zambrano game, the no-hitter up
right,
in Milwaukee.
That was,
for, I believe, a rainout game. Or, no, Hurricane hit Houston area, so they had to play the game up there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so, of course, Houston kind of got canned because it was supposed to be a home game for them.
And it was all Cub fans there. So
exactly.
I know it's going to be difficult, and I know the Cubs want to do this in a year and a half span. So, you know, it all depends on the timetable the Ricketts are able to get with the renovation, you know, and the companies that are going to, you know, help assist, you know, help build, you know, renovate the Wrigley Field. So
right. There's
still a lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's one thing that I've thought of where they look at it and go, you know, well, maybe we will move, you know, just for the point of the past few stadiums, the Cardinals and the Yankees, you know, you could see the construction of their new stadium while they played their last season in their old
stadium. Right, because they had the lot to play or to build one as they could still play in the old one.
And yeah. I know it's probably not going to happen, but...
Here's my biggest concern. I mean, I don't want to interrupt you, Steve.
Right, no, go ahead.
But my biggest concern, I mean, the Cubs, the Ricketts have already invested so much in trying to modernize Wrigley Field.
They just spent $20 million on the property by the McDonald's to build facilities.
Not to mention they just put up that new scoreboard in right field last year.
Yeah, they've
like,
made
they've done so many investments to Wrigley Field just to finally say, you know what, we give up, goodbye, we're going to Rosemont. It just doesn't make much sense. You know,
right. Is it possible to play in two stadiums? Is there a rule against having two stadiums? Like, could the Cubs play 15
There's still a lot. I mean, yeah, and plus we have Chicago right there. We have US Cellular too.
Yeah. Well,
Sorry, go ahead.
If they do move to Rosemont, can they play 15 games a year at Wrigley Field?
I don't know, actually, to be honest with you. I mean,
yeah,
I've never seen teams play at other stadiums unless it's like a reason, like the rain out or something.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if
I don't think you can do that.
Right. The only example I can get are the New York Jets and the New York Giants. They both played in the same stadium up until the past year or 2 years ago when they got the new, I forgot who got the new stadium. That's my only kind of comparison. So, I mean, if the Cubs end up moving to Rosemont, you know, there's so many unanswered questions, so many hypothetical ways they can go about doing this.
Well, yeah, then again, if the Cubs move to Rosemont, what's going to happen to Wrigley Field?
Exactly.
I mean, they're just going to have it
Cubs,
sit there. And
the Cubs own Wrigley Field.
They do.
So, I mean, they could let Northwestern play there. They could still let concerts be held there.
Okay, so
they could play 15 games a year there.
But here's what I'm saying. If the Cubs are going to own two stadiums, you want to talk about a business malfunction, right. You're going to own two stadiums that's going to cost you X amount of millions of dollars just to play 15. You know what I mean? Right. That wouldn't make any sense. If the Cubs are going to move, they need to disband with Wrigley Field and let Wrigley Field be its own thing.
Right.
It makes no sense to own two stadiums. That's a waste.
They don't have to. I mean, they could sell Wrigley Field, and then whoever owns Wrigley Field, you know, can lease it out to all those people for concerts and for, you know, Northwestern and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And here's one thing I came up with. I mean, it's just an idea. You know, the Chicago Fire have that brand new stadium. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cubs couldn't play there simply because of the fact that soccer fields are a lot bigger than. I mean, the Cubs wouldn't be able to fit in Soldier Field. That stadium's not designed for a baseball game.
No,
the field's not big enough. But the Chicago Fire's new stadium, soccer fields can house a baseball game. So they might be able to do something with them.
Okay, well then, yeah, that would work. Because that's one thing I was just wondering. Because obviously, if they do ever want to, you know, renovate Wrigley Field instead of moving, it's going to be one of those where there's going to be a whole season where they can't play there.
Right. So, still a lot of unanswered questions to be answered in the coming weeks and months. Who knows when this will all end and if the city of Chicago will budge and, you know, let the Ricketts do their own business.
Right.
Anyways, any final word, guys? I know spring practice started this week for the Boilermakers, and it sounded like the new, there's, you know, you could tell there's a new sheriff in town, so it's kind of been kind of pretty exciting. I know, Tanner, I know you're the only one of the three of us that are on the Purdue campus. Any chance you can go to an open practice?
You know, that I can look into that. I definitely could.
I know you are a very businessman. I'm just bringing up
I'm a huge bit. Yeah, but I mean, absolutely, I could try and see if I can't squeeze something in.
Right, because that's one thing. Right now it's a 1-1 game in the Chicago Blackhawks, only 5 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I know Darrell Hazel has opened up the practice to the fans. No passes required or anything. Something Danny Hope wouldn't even allow. He'd allow the media in just for the stretching, and that was it. So you could there's definitely a sense of new sheriff in town, and supposedly in practice as well as in practice too, just the way the team is responding to new drills.
I'm excited for the spring game.
I am too. April 13th.
Yeah, it should be a bunch of fun.
Yes, it should be fun. I'm counting down the days.
Absolutely.
So, if you guys don't have any final word, Tanner, whenever you're ready for the wrap-up.
All right, let's get to it, I guess. Sad. And hopefully we'll try and get these more frequently out to you guys, right, these shows?
Yeah.
Every couple weeks or something like that?
Yeah, keep the bi-weekly going. I think we could do
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. We'll try and get you guys some more fun.
All right.
Anyway, next time on Sports Night in the next couple weeks, we will break down and analyze the games played by all the teams in the NCAA as well as Purdue's, how they're doing in the CBI. Hopefully they'll win it all, and at least we'll be able to say we're some kind of champion, right? And like I said, we're going to keep you up to date with March Madness. Remember to follow us on Twitter at PU Sports Tweets. PU. Sorry, I found that funny. You know, like PU Stinky, you know.
Okay.
Okay, you guys didn't find it too funny, sorry.
Not particularly.
At PU Sports Tweets, and find us on Facebook at Purdue Sports Tweets. This is Mike Tanner.
This is Mike Becca.
And this is Steve Driver signing off. And as always,
boil up. Bring your sister over here, let her dance with me just for the hell of it. Well, you must be a boy with bones like that. She said you got me wrong. I would have sold them to you if I could. I just kept the last of my clothes on. Oh yeah. Call me up, take me down with you when you go. I could be your regular belle. And I'll sit down for little Steven and Joanna around the back of my hotel. Oh yeah. I was good, she was hot, stealing everything she got. I was born, she was over the worst of it.
give me a kiss. Thank you, dear. Bring your sister over here. Let her dance with me just for the hell of it.